welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today.
How?
Hello.
It's lovely to see you guys. So yeah, today I'm actually really quite happy because I'm joined with by Sherry Hinnish from over in the States, and also Deborah Dahl from over there as well. And we're going to talk about the future of supply. And yeah, I'm really quite interested in what you guys are going to say, actually, and the conversation we're going to have. And yeah, so Sherry, you're the supply chain queen. You're a returning guest. You've been on my other podcast show, and you've recently started something called the Supply Chain Movement with Deborah over there. So what's that all about?
Yeah, so we just started the Supply Chain Revolution, and it's basically a place for rebels. People who want to be disruptive, disrupt the business as usual operating model. And we talk about all things related to supply chain 5.0, circular economy, sustainability, tech, really, really cool tech in a cool way. And the future of work, which includes leadership, diversity, inclusion, all of the things that really define the pulse of business right now. And I have found the most amazing partner, Deborah, the Circular Nomad. Deborah, why don't you introduce yourself for everyone?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on today, Nat. As Sherry mentioned, we started the Supply Chain Revolution just about a month and a half ago, and we've been so delighted by the coming together of these rebels. So my background is in supply chain and operations. I love this space. I tripped and fell into it during uni, and I just haven't looked back since. So I love supply chain. I love the way that inventory moves around the world. And like Sherry mentioned, I love thinking about how supply chain can do good and do well. And those are really the topics that Sherry and I share together.
Very cool.
Woo-hoo!
Woo! Yeah. So, yeah, I'm really interested. So first of all, I think, I really want to ask you, I've got a few questions. We're going to talk about how is sustainability disruptive to the supply chain? And that's something that I'd love to hear your opinions on, ladies.
Yeah. So if you think about what's happening right now in the world, we're really at an inflection point in our industry. And sustainability is truly disruptive because it fills an unmet need. And it's becoming a priority for investors and customers. When we think about trust and transparency and all the things that people want, technologies like, for example, blockchain and network orchestration with supply chain tech, it fills all of these unmet needs. Something as simple as, you know, this can or a Starbucks cup, people want to know, can I scan it? Where is it sourced? Was child labor involved? You know, is it compostable? All of the things that we don't know right now in the future of work and tech, all of that data and insight becomes very, very relatable and transparent. So it's important because, you know, up to 80% of the spend happens in the supply chain, and so do all these impacts. So we have a lot of complex opportunity to design a better world for future generations. And supply chains are right at the heart of all of it. They're right in the center.
Super, super. Yeah, last time we spoke, I don't think I mentioned about the Renegade Rum Distillery to you, did I?
You did.
I did? Yeah, because they've just built this distillery in Grenada, right? And
yes.
It just made me think, I was just thinking of my Chianti Classico. I'm just having a little drink. It's been a long day, right? And, you know, wanted to show a bit of respect to the Italians. And I was in the supermarket at 6:30 this morning, and I thought, I'll buy a bottle of Chianti. So I'm cooking a nice pasta. I've got my bolognese sauce on and everything, right? So anyhow, the Renegade Rum, they're sourcing this sugarcane from the field, yeah? So it's from field to bottle, yeah? And then bottle to consumer, right? But this, I know Oracle have done it already, right? They did that with some beer, didn't they? And so you can trace a bottle of beer and then they can work out which batch it was in, yeah? But I think I'm sort of still struggling a little bit with how the mechanics of that actually works, like from a very simple way. Like, how do you actually say, well, this is where it came from and this is where it's gone?
I think that the response, so when in general, when there is a risk event, your time to response can often define how effective you are in these sorts of disruptions. And we're seeing that now. So when you think about provenance, or provenance, depending on where you are in the world.
Sherry pronounced it provenance.
Earlier, and Deborah said, no, it's sort of like finance in finance. So
finance. Check out episode right. Whatever's 25 minutes long of just the two of us going back and forth for reference on finance versus finance. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, so just think about a supply chain. Okay. Think about how many companies are involved, how many nodes. That's what it's called, Matt. It's called nodes in tiers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could literally have like 100 different actors involved in a supply chain when you go from the customer to the field, as you're describing. Yeah. So that's not the issue. The issue is people have disparate IT systems and they don't know where data is. It might be on someone's spreadsheet in Excel. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, maybe even now, like how do people know when they get the question where to look, if it's accurate, if the data has integrity? So blockchain, for example, because there's one source of the truth, there's one ledger, one way of working, that time to response and recovery becomes exponentially shorter.
Well, I think it's interesting. Do we keep going if Nat's walked away?
I think we do. Do we? He's muted.
I'm going to pause. Because I'm going to say something really interesting, and I would like him to be here for this.
He's back.
Are you ready? Back.
Sorry, guys. There was someone at the door. Yeah. Sorry. So anyhow.
No, can I that really. Be a chapter I, but, in your book.
But you didn't really answer my question yet. So.
Okay.
So when I'm in the field, yeah. Okay. Right. I'm growing. I've got some sugarcane. Yeah. And I'm growing this sugarcane. Right. Every step of that journey from that product, from when, let's say you grew it from like a cutting, yeah? How do you document that entire process? Like that's what I'm trying to ask you.
It's okay, really so I'm gonna, hard.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna go. You're gonna go.
You go.
Thank you.
Can I just cushion one thing before you start?
Okay.
It's before it even gets to the blockchain. There are things that have to happen that you have to have sustainability and sustainable development as a core strategy in your supply chain. So you don't just show up and assume that everyone's operating, you know, ethically in the field. Like there are things that happen before it even gets to the point of entry on the blockchain.
Yeah.
Deborah, take it away.
Thank you. So I'd like to give a little shout out to our buddy, Sean Cooley, who just wrote a super interesting book. And in that, he talks about the shift from the fifth to the sixth wave of technology. And why this is important is because supply chain falls along with that. So in the fifth wave, supply chain was this never heard from as long as everything's going fine entity in the corner back room. And we recently talked to Lauren Akoba at Starbucks, and she mentioned it as this, like, we made our numbers, sales, good work, marketing, yay, supply chain. Try not to F up. And that's basically right. been the relationship between the business and the supply chain until now. And so now in less than a business generation, which I'd call 6 or 7 years would be a business generation, and maybe 2-3 years, now is the expectation of complete transparency. We want to know everything about everywhere that's moving. Now, here's the secret. Supply chains don't even know where all their stuff is. So yeah, it could be a spreadsheet. It could be a piece of paper. It could be an iPhone note. This is just absolute truth on how these super complex supply chains are run. And so I think what is flabbergasting to people is in today's age of consumer apps and consumer access to data, supply chains aren't as quick as all of our day-to-day items. We can't turn on and off lights with our phones, for example. So we're having this transition and almost like a whiplash of going so quickly. So as we take the sugarcane clipping, et cetera, the first question is, does the sugarcane farmer know where sugarcane is? Period. And there's this in-house work to be done to even understand where a single node in the chain, a single company, where their items are. And this is, again, inventory is the most interesting topic on the planet. But then we add this relationship of a
Deborah.
Chain, really a chain. It's like a web, right? It's a network. And so here's an interesting relationship that nobody ever, my friend Alyosha wrote his master's thesis basically on, until you can accept the supply chain has no hierarchy, you will fail in business. Because these chains, no one has allegiance to anybody. Nobody reports to anybody else. They're all equal businesses. Okay. And so the idea that you owe me data because you're my supplier is, one, not really true, and it's not handled well along these relationships. But two, if your supplier doesn't even have the data sorted out to begin with, maybe you should be lending a helping hand to say, look, let's solve this problem together.
Yeah.
So lots of different complex ideas in there. It's not as easy as, can't we just put a barcode on everything?
Okay.
Don't get me started on barcode type.
So is it actually down to the barcode? Like, there has to be a tracking, like, let's just have an example. I got one bag of sugarcane, yeah?
Sure.
And I put it in a bag. I know what day it was harvested. I know who harvested it, where they live. I know who they are, and they drop it off and it goes in the tractor, and then it gets to the door of the distillery, and then it gets crushed, and then it gets finalized. Yeah. I'm going to talk to Renegade about how they do this. Yeah. Probably. Cause I know the CEO. Yeah. So, but it's like, that's what people need to understand, that each stage, right, of that process is tracked and it needs to be controlled, but then there's still potential efforts.
There are points of failure. And I think that's sort of what we're getting to. There's a paradigm where you go from black box to glass box. So where data and all of those things are held very close to the vest, in the future of work, in the future of supply chain, it truly is transparent and you can trust it. And there's integrity that's embedded and that you rely on for business decisions. And it involves human behavior. So it's not just technology. It's also people. You have to win the hearts and minds of people. You have to get them on board. And the number one question is, why? What's our purpose? How does this impact us as a company, you as an individual and your participation in the supply chain, you as a farmer? All of these things all these questions have to be understood before you actually start putting things in boxes and tracking them. Because you're right, Nat, that single point of failure in your supply chain could be someone who's like, it doesn't really matter. This doesn't affect me. Yeah. And that's why this is a very human thing. The future of work is human.
Got it. So
can I go one step further with that before we move on?
Please.
Because I think it's really important to note that the item can go in the box and the item can come out of the box.
Oh, yeah.
And even if you inspire the people who are in your company, since you brought up food is one of the highest rates of counterfeit and fraud through supply chain. So some of that organic produce, folks, sorry, not organic. Because
And wine and spirits.
They switch
Yes,
it.
Very dangerous wine and spirits.
So especially outside of the United States.
Just because the data is intact and trustable because it's in this unbreachable blockchain, it doesn't mean that the physical product has never been tampered with. And I think that's something really important for people to grasp, that a supply chain, as long as it's a physical good, is still very much a physical place. And we have to remember that there needs to be some way of tracking that. Now, this is a problem we've never fixed in the history of humanity.
Right.
So we're not going to fix it overnight. But I want to call out that we can open the box again, right?
Yeah. So in theory, the future, if it was up to us, futuristic thought leaders, right? We are. let's be real.
I was sitting up so all of our shirts could be seen.
We are. Yeah.
Supply chain revolution.
There you go, right? So we are, right? So it's about monitoring. It's about monitoring, and it's about basically becoming more like the Chinese. And I hate to say it, but it could be a case of you monitor the tractor in the field with video. You monitor the employees using facial recognition. You monitor the bags that they put the product into before it goes to the fermentation vessel, yeah? And it goes on the scales, and you monitor every single step of that journey. And I believe that within 10 years, maybe could be less, maybe 20 years, but it could be less. I think 5 years, right? This could be a reality, yeah? I mean, Hitachi had robot warehouse managers in 2015. We know this. I said this in the last podcast we did, Sherry, yeah? And yeah. If Hitachi can do that, right, then we can take supply chain to a full traceability, not just I put a barcode on this bag and actually, well, my mate Johnny gave me that like grain and it was actually from his farm around the corner. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
You're bringing up some good points, Nat, around supplier development and supplier diversity through the lens of sustainable supply chain. And there are some really interesting stats that just came out of Harvard and NYU Stern. So when businesses actually make the shift to doing well and doing good, this means doing sustainably and making a profit, on average, they see a 35% uptick in cost savings, which is, I mean, wow. Who doesn't want to save money, right?
Wow.
There's 29% improvement in supplier innovation. So when you engage upstream in your suppliers, they're actually thinking about, hey, how can we do this more effectively?
Right? Or engage, don't demand. Engage, partner.
Engage, partner. Right.
It's what we're doing. Right. I know I'm a bit far away, but you can't see my future otherwise. Sorry. Try to engage. It's not very easy, really. It's my future on my t-shirt, you see. People can't see it for listening to a podcast, can they? But Sherry, I think you should turn your microphone down just a little bit because it's bit louder than Deborah.
I'm hot.
So
it's hot.
Why? I've got a question, yeah. Why is circularity and its impact on supply chain important?
Tremendous. I'm so glad you asked. So if we take this as a transition, actually, from the disruptive nature of sustainability, one example of why. So what we're seeing, if you are in strategic sourcing, you are already well aware of this. There are critical metals, elements in the planet that we are running out of. And now people can argue with this, and yes, there will still be some metal in the planet. It just becomes so difficult to get to it or mine through it. Mm-hmm. And so what we are finding is traditionally the last 150 years or so, we have gotten really good at making items, making them quickly, thanks to Henry Ford. This has been amazing because we have the emergence of a middle class. This is great. However, what's happening is at the end of that, what's called a linear economy, we take something out of the planet, we make something with it, we use it, and then we normally throw it away. The problem is there is more value to be squeezed out of that item that we're not getting right now. So we're literally throwing money away. You know, it's funny, I saw this meme once that said, have you ever looked around your house and seen all those items and realized those items used to be money? Your money. Your money is sitting around the house. And it's the same idea as that our collective money is being thrown into landfills. Yeah. So the circular economy says, look, there's more value to be had. What if we could, instead of only in a line, make it more loopy, make more exchanges, make more, really place the dollar value on these materials, even if they're scraps. How can we use our efficiency and innovation and technology to be able to recapture those? Cool. So that's the general concept. Now in supply chain, we know as we do value stream maps, for example, that the value is defined by the customer. So circular economy says there's more customers to define new types of value. Awesome. This has lots of impacts on supply chain. If we think about it from the process physical level, I don't know for everybody else on the phone, but all the supply chains I've worked on in before, returns or reverse logistics has always been like the nightmare. Harry Potter room under the stairs. You know, it's yes. like, how do I talk to returns? And they're like, ooh, you got to go talk to Karen. She's been here for 43 years. You know,
no one's ever seen her.
Right. We just know she works through all those claims collections.
Yeah.
So instead, I predict in the next 10 years, we won't have a department called reverse logistics. That's just going to be called supply chain. And we're going to get very good at moving materials around. And more importantly, actually facilitating the exchange of currency and money. One of the flows that people normally forget with supply chain, you have physical flows, you have information flows. They often forget there's financial flows that trigger all of those items from moving.
Yes.
The money gets super complicated with
circular. Very.
But it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The pie can be bigger and each person can start to grow. The basic premise says you can make more money while paying less for new material, which is awesome. So Sherry talked about 1/3 cost savings. The math as you work through the value to be had if you switch to a circular strategy is really tremendous. You can make more jobs, you can employ more people for less money. And right now, especially going into this time across the world, we are anticipating unprecedented levels of unemployment.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we want to be able to create jobs for less money than a linear strategy would present? So yeah. My argument is that circularity or circular economy, circular business models can actually be a strategy to mitigate the disruption that is coming from sustainability, from transparency requests, from remote monitoring, like you mentioned in the last example. We do this today. We can monitor airplane engines, wind turbines. We can monitor machines from afar, and we want to fix them before they break. This is a key tenet of the circular economy. But in order to do that, we need spare parts available. Some spares take over a year to make, start to finish. And so wouldn't it behoove us to not start from the mine, actually start from material that's already around? Don't take a year, take a month. So you can go faster. If you're not buying all that raw material, you can go faster, it'd be cheaper. And what supply chain doesn't want to be faster and cheaper? So there's all these great little nuggets that can really allow for such a cool way of looking at the business. And I think supply chains have spent, 15, 20 years since we were declared a discipline at finding the cost, shave out 5%, find me 10 million. We don't have much more to go down. So we have to find new levers that we can pull. And I really think that circularity is one of those big strategic levers you'll see more over the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Customers want it. Customers want sustainability and circular economy. Yeah. We know
they
this.
Sure do.
There's a growing 100%. Trend. IBM just published a study that over 70% of consumers, they want to support brands who model sustainability and who have started thinking and or embedding circular thinking across their supply chain.
CPG companies, for example, if they put ocean plastic on the front of a plastic bottle, they're seeing massive upticks in sales of those particular bottles. And so consumers, if given the choice, of course, will choose the right option if presented.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Thank you for going over the history of supply chain and mass production, and you know, it's super interesting. My background, right? My dad and my grandfather went to MIT, right? And they both studied industrial engineering. Yeah, so cool. That's my thing. Yeah, and I've worked in a factory, so like I get what you're talking about. Like I get
totally.
It,
yeah? Totally. So,
what lessons can we learn from the past with the problems we're going through now? You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I went to the supermarket the other day. There were no toilet rolls. I mean, but was that a very careful strategic play based upon them running out on purpose so that it would make people think? That's the thing. Or was it just bad supply chain? Like, who the hell panics about?
There's a third option, Nat.
It's not bad supply chain.
There's a third option. Sherry's going to tell you about it.
Okay. So when you think about something like toilet paper, that's a commodity. Okay. That's something that you use every day. There are not ever that I can remember in my life on earth, a spike in the demand of toilet paper.
No, it is a very steady, very predictable commodity.
I shouldn't know this, but I do. the average American household uses about 141 rolls of toilet paper per year, and that was based on 2018 data.
Wow.
So I also happen to know that between my household and my parents, we've purchased about 300 rolls of toilet paper.
No.
In 2 weeks. So this is the thing. You can have all the technology in the world. You can have AI, you can have demand sensing, you can have, you know, deep sophisticated modeling, but human behavior, we are the demand signal. So if you don't understand consumer trends, any erratic behavior, it's very hard to predict those things.
And we're
and
crazy.
We don't,
so
yeah, and we don't plan
right.
to those. This is a black swan.
Wait. Look, I've got a giraffe.
Is this the proof that we're crazy?
This is cool, right? My daughter gave me this giraffe. She's 8, yeah, and she's super cool. Shout out to Maya if she's listening. And this is a giraffe, yeah. So yeah, you're right. I can't argue with that. Really.
We have, this isn't bad supply chain. This is just people freak out over weird things. And yeah. I think, you know, toilet paper. Of like, why not rice or beans or non-perishables?
Crazy, right? You're gonna die. Like you've got a shower, yeah.
Yeah,
you're gonna die, but you're gonna buy toilet paper. Like, come on.
But I think it's interesting, you know, as people start to realize the phenomenon that in the back of your grocery store or wherever you buy your items, it turns out there is not a mini factory of gnomes producing your food. This is shocking when people realize that, but why can't you have it right now? I had to explain to a sales team once that it was in fact physically impossible for something to get from China to Europe in 4 hours. That is, it's physics, right? So the thing is, there's enough toilet paper produced. It's just not physically in the store that makes stops between the factory and the shop. And so when we take a very steady state item, and we put in this unbelievable, unpredicted movement, the supply chain really freaks out. And I don't mean bad supply chain. I mean the automation on a commoditized good is very high. And so when something terribly crazy happens like that, then all the bells and whistles goes off, and all of a sudden this autonomous solution needs human beings. Because it says, there is nothing in the history of time that has prepared me to make this decision. Me, AI, looking at your supply chain. Please, human, please come look. And humans are normally make the wrong choices in a supply chain anyway. And we end up with large irregularities through supply chains, which essentially means nobody knows what the truth is. And so it's really hard if you go back to remember that in a single company, knowing where your stuff is in the supply chain is actually really hard. Now try to share that if you're a retailer, try to share that up the supply chain and you're like, good, where is everything? We're out. Yeah, we're completely out. We have nothing. I don't know what to tell you. What's the demand tomorrow? I have no idea. It's going to depend on a large influencer going and buying 300 rolls of toilet paper for her and her family. Thank you, Sherry.
You know,
this is what ends up happening.
You're guilty. She's guilty. Look at
I'm
that.
I'm going to argue it's not conspiracy.
She looks guilty.
It's not that supply chain.
I'm guilty.
You should feel
I mean,
bad.
It's also bullwhip too. So
I'm trying to explain without calling it bullwhip because people
feel
don't
bad.
Know what that means. You know,
it's okay.
Bullwhip is something that I'm good because I can tell you that, well, you know, Nat, my husband's Puerto Rican, so I sent him.
He's so cool. He's wicked.
I've been quarantined for almost 2.5 weeks and I sent him to the grocery store, and what does he come back with? You can't even make this up. These are the things that are most important for our family survival. Toilet paper, rice, beans, barbecue sauce,
and chicken.
No chicken, chips and salsa. That's
it. Puerto Rican. All he needs is rice and beans.
Rice and beans.
That's literally all we have.
I
and then
love
like
rice and
the
beans.
The sprinkle of like snacks.
Oh,
but,
I need to come visit you guys. And
the snacks were meant to just get him home from the grocery store. You were never meant to see those snacks.
Correct. Correct.
Correct. So look. We need to get some lessons from this, yeah.
Right.
What are we gonna extract as So we've got two forces here. We've got the government who are managing crisis communications, and then we've got the retailers who are managing the communications with the government and then creating action plans, which they've come up with probably 3, 4, maybe 6 weeks ago, because they knew what was happening. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to work it out, If I'd have known better, I would have stayed in freaking Poland with my girlfriend, but that's another story, So anyhow, what are we going to learn from this?
So I think there are a few key takeaways when you look at the value you can create using sustainability and circular economy in your supply chain. Number one is managing risks more effectively. All right, all the external risks that happen outside of your business, all the way upstream, you mentioned in the field. I mean, it could be anywhere in your supply chain. Do you know what's happening and do you know why? You also need stakeholder engagement. You can actually become more competitive by communicating and talking to other people. Go figure.
Whoa.
But then there's anti-commission, there's anti-competition laws, which have been relaxed, I might add, in England at the moment, in the UK. But so are you saying that anti-competition laws should be like changed slightly in order to flex with these sorts of situations?
Absolutely.
But like,
in risk situations, I think we have to shift. So there needs to be a different definition of what pre-competitive means. And if we keep going with toilet paper, sharing demand about toilet paper is not breaking any laws that I'm aware of. We're not talking about price fixing. We're not changing anything. We're saying everybody else sold out too. And then how do we actually make the best decisions for the community at the time?
Right. So when that also comes to food going out of date, this is a potential...
for cold chain.
It's a potential benefit of this. So if we did that, we could actually say, oh, well, I've got this food going out of date tomorrow. My forecasted demand for cheese, or bread or eggs, isn't gonna cut the mustard. Do you want my food before I throw it out? Right. I mean, like, this is the kind of stuff that we could do before we then give it away to people who need to eat it. Yeah.
I think we're going to see that in the future of supply chains. We're going to see cold chain 5PL sitting on top of existing technology. It's like the layer of the layer of the layer, where you can then move to inventory hubs, inventory pooling in network of networks, and competitors will actually become customers of each other. Yeah. And it's good for the world. It's good for business. It enhances financial performance and reduces environmental impacts. It's good for everyone. Yeah.
We don't throw money away as much, right?
Yeah.
And I think on that, something that you're getting at, Nat, is the concept of an early warning system. And we yawn and roll our eyes at this often because we're in such firefighter mentalities. And when exactly. And so now people are having disruption management meetings, disaster recovery meetings, risk management meetings, but they don't when times are good. And this, I think, is the mark of a good supply chain and a wannabe good supply chain, or a good supply chain professional. And I've been really lucky so far, supply chain professional, is that if you have operations in a major area that represents a huge amount of risk, China, and you didn't have a line item that just said China, and you're not reviewing that at least quarterly, then I'm surprised by this, right?
Yes.
So if we can really go back to basics on early warning systems, which frankly we had, somebody had, supply chains did not have, somebody had. We're often the last to know because we see the consumer behavior and reaction, but the supply chain didn't know upstream. And so the fact that we're finding out now how many people had briefings on this, how long ago, we, supply chain, we could have been in a much better position to not stock out or to put in buying limits or actually flex some of the levers that we have that we just didn't know early enough we needed to put in place.
Yeah. So that's really a culture thing. That's really, I'm in management over here and I'm not communicating with supply chain.
Yeah, this is government to private business. I'm currently throwing under the bus some of the recent articles that we're seeing in America.
Okay. Well, we will talk more about this in future episodes, I'm sure. Yeah. But, you know, I don't want to take up all your time. And I've got an appointment with this superb Chianti on my own and a lovely spaghetti bolognese I'm cooking. It's been cooking for nearly 2 hours already, yeah?
Wow.
Oh, it's going to be good. And I'm going to be thinking about the Italians right now and how beautiful they are. A beautiful people, yeah?
They are.
My friend lives... I've got two friends that live there. One's an English teacher. He went to the supermarket the other day and he sent me a video back with basically, it was a video of just like absolutely full shelves everywhere. Yeah. And he sent me another video basically complaining about how awful the English people were and how unconsiderate they were. And actually, I hate to say it, but in a few cases, he's correct. Yeah. Because these people are idiots. They buy all this stuff that they don't freaking need. It sits in the shelf. We bought £1 billion worth of items. Yeah. That are like probably not necessary. All right. All I bought was an extra bag of pasta. That's all I bought.
And a Chianti.
Well, no, I bought the Chianti today. The pasta I bought the other day because I was like freaking out. Yeah. And I was like, I need some salad. Yeah. I've got to buy some salad. Yeah. And I went in it. The supermarket was so busy at like 7:30 in the morning. I was just like, I'll just get out. I've got to get out.
I don't need pasta. I don't need salad today.
Yeah. So this morning I was just like, right, I'm getting up super early. And to be fair, Tesco's did a very good job. I'm not going to lie. They did a very good job. I hardly saw anyone apart from the occasional idiot that invaded my 3 feet space. Yeah. Just
get out of here and wash your hands.
I'm angry about that.
Nat, you know what's crazy? So where I live in Maryland, they have a 10-person limit in any supermarket, no matter how large it is. And you have to stay 6 feet away from the other person. So there are lines that are like wrapped around the block down the street to get into like Trader Joe's or Giant or Costco or BJ's or anything like that.
Oh, that's really good because it means that they're under pressure to get in and get out fast. So they're not going to bloody buy all this stuff and spend 3 hours thinking. Very clever. I like that idea. Nice.
It's like remember those shows where you could have... Like you had like 1 minute to grab everything that you could.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. They were cool.
Every episode of Top Chef. I love that.
We should bring that up. Yeah. We need to bring that up. Right. Well, thank you. It's been fantastic. If people want you, they just need to look for the Supply Chain Revolution and Supply Chain Queen and Deborah Dahl. And you're not dull, are you really? Your name is.
Well, I mean, now you tell
dull,
me.
But you're not dull.
Oh, Nat, how I've missed you. Okay, and can we also say that we cut out like the first 20 minutes of our video, thankfully.
Yeah, well, because
it was
we
too
don't
hot
swear.
For podcasting.
We have a no swearing policy on our
We did not realize that, and I was really devastated to learn that at the beginning of this episode.
Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.